And I've only had a chance to go over this once, but it says unless the loan is for placer mining, so, and I assume that's, there's different provisions for placer mining?
Yes, in placer mining and in the other methods of mining, placer mining, it would get one through one season. For placer mining, you can gear up and be in production faster than you can in other hard rock operations. And placer miners felt that in one season, they could be capable of starting payments. Other miners felt that the development of a mine from the advanced exploration stage of proving the in-ground deposits, etc., was a longer operation for production than it was in placer mining. You might want to get Sam on that. We have some expertise available that I can get in here for you. The former commissioner and some of the mining people that could explain that better than I can.
I think that you've made sense out of that for me. So the other question is, repayment of the loan principal shall begin 1 year after the date production begins, or 5 years from the date, whichever sooner. So in a hard rock situation,
yes,
where you aren't producing for 5 years, you
only
make
pay
the loan.
Interest.
Pardon me?
You would only then be paying interest.
Or you'd pay the Okay, you just pay the interest in the time. Okay. And the okay, I see. And I guess the only other question I have is the capitalization of this loan program. I notice there's no provision for that in here, and I wonder what the recommended capitalization will be and source of funds, I guess.
Well, at the time it was started, of course, you know, it was with a $40 million in mine, revolving mine loan fund. Now, I don't know whether that would be fit best under ADA or ADA, but I think that would be the determination that people would have to get people know more about around it.
We'll stand in recess. Call the meeting to order. At the time of recess, we were discussing the mining revolving loan fund. I think we have a motion before us to adopt this, and unanimous consent was asked, and there was an objection. Senator Sumner.
Representative Cotton had a question if he still has. I don't know if he got an answer or not. We were interrupted.
Yeah, I lost my place. Let me find the amendment.
This is what it looks like.
Have another copy for copy.
Mine is involved in the fund right there.
We never did. There wasn't any decision about capitalization of the fund. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's correct.
Are there, is there going to be a subsequent amendment that would address that?
Doing a different bill, yeah. 205.
What do you plan to, as far as capitalization of this fund? Does anybody have any idea on that?
Mr. Gallagher, yeah, prepared to testify and said he knows what.
So, Mr. Gallagher, do you want to come forward? If we take your chair, so there's just one more.
Mr. Chairman, Betty sent me down to talk to the Miners Association, and we met with them, and what they would like to do is still leave this revolving loan fund in the Department of Commerce. Betty wants a number that you people should negotiate for. She originally started at $40 million, but she'll take a lesser number.
You sound a lot like Philly going around.
Is that a compliment? And then over the interim, we would write regulations in ADA that would fit their program. There are certain phasing into the ADA program that have to be worked out with the miners, like capitalized interest and a few things like that.
Mike?
Yeah.
Like what?
What you do with capitalized interest and things like that. It's something you take care of in a regulatory manner.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Cotton?
Yeah.
upon review of the bill, I think that it's probably probably a good deal. There's a couple of unusual provisions. And I compare it to maybe a fishing loan, and on a fishing loan like they usually set the amount of a loan, the limit, as to, they compare it to probably what one of the big boats might be worth. Like $500,000, you can get a nice big 58-foot fish tank. What do you get for $5 million? Where did they come up with that figure?
I don't know. I just met with the Miners Association. I didn't go over those numbers. But it takes that sort of capitalization, I guess, to get a small mine going.
What do you guys say about it?
When he gets through any questions that he can't answer, I would attempt to.
Chairman, can I have Bob address the question of what you get for $5 million?
Okay, for in the Fairbanks district, for instance, the big push right now is on gold mining. In the Fairbanks area, there are potential hard rock mining operations. That's not plaster, but the gold is still in place in the rock. One of the biggest deterrents to a rather major hard rock mining operation in the Fairbanks area is the lack of smelters and ore reduction facilities. For $5 million, you could put in up to a 200 ton per day mill in the Fairbanks area that could custom mill ore from within 10-15 mile radius of that mill, which would bring a lot of small mines into production and would do some of the very things that Mr. Sumner's talking about, getting the economy going and putting people to work instead of having them on welfare. And $5 million would adequately establish a milling operation.
One other item, the department would like about $40,000 to administer this program.
You're talking like a commissioner again, huh?
Yeah.
Representative Meekins.
I'm sure you hear a lot of criticism that, you know, that despite what you've just said, that this is a welfare program or a grant program, not a loan program. I don't know anything about it, okay? And I'm not making that accusation. I want you to defend as if somebody was making that accusation. What would you tell them? Because people have said that to me, and I haven't looked into it. And I just want to hear what you say. If people say that, well, look here, they don't pay back for 5 years, and it's a 1,000-to-1 shot to hit anything anyway, so it's a real hinky kind of loan to make, and you know, they're never going to pay it back, and we're just giving money away, and if we want to do that, fine, but it's a grant program, not a loan program.
Okay, what you say is true if the program was treated as in that manner. Now, in years past, we have had what they call a prospector's loan program, where a prospector going out and looking for new discoveries or new minerals could come to the state and get a loan. If he didn't find anything, he didn't have to pay it back. That's a grant program.
Right.
Now, in my view, the miners that I know in Fairbanks aren't looking for any grant program. They're looking for an opportunity to borrow money at a reasonable interest rate and go out and get an operation underway.
And what about the 5 years? On page 3, section D, it says, unless the loan under this chapter is made to underwrite, is it called placer or placer?
Placer.
Placer mining activities, the placement of the loan principal shall begin 1 year after the date mineral production begins, or 5 years from the date the loan is made, whichever is sooner.
If it's under audit and they start making money, they should pay it back right away.
But there's a chance it might be 5 years for the repay?
It's possible. I would submit that if gold stays above $500 an ounce, there's no reason why they shouldn't pay it back after the first year.
Well, if they don't strike it, I mean, if they don't find any, it might be...
Prudent manager of a miner's loan fund, the placer areas of Alaska are well known and well mapped, and we know pretty much where the gold is. And it's not a prospecting proposition much anymore.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Sumner.
Yeah, that's the point I wanted to bring it out. This is not for prospecting, this is production.
It's not.
No.
Oh, I see.
This is advanced drilling and known deposits.
Senator Kernkin.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Representative Meekins, I think where the problem is coming in, this is not the old prospector's fund like we have on the books now. And it's not a grant program. they have to prove, the feasibility has to be proven, and it is for advance for drilling, where the deposits are known. It's not the gamble that's in the prospecting bill.
Mr. Chairman? Yeah, that's a very excellent point to make. As I told you, I haven't had a chance to really look into this, and I just asked that very question because that's the accusation people are making. I think they're making the assumption that this is just a redo of that essential grant program for prospecting. This is a loan program for prospects that are already pretty well
If you
feasible.
Notice the terminology there, Mr. Chairman, the terminology there is advanced drilling. There is no room anywhere in there. It started out, if you remember, as a prospecting idea. But when we looked at the old prospecting fund, that's too much of a grant program. We didn't want to interlock the two or mix the two in any way. This has nothing to do with grants for prospecting. This is for known deposits and that are checked out, feasibility studies made.
The first couple of pages is very explicit and descriptive to indicate that there has to be an economic plan that has to be in place. It looks to me like a legitimate professional approach.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, the prospecting fund is still on the books. That one goes up to $4,000 in grants, and those are very, you know, it could be very much a grant program because those are very a much a high risk situation. This is not the high risk situation because there's evaluation of in ground stock as well, or before it has to be advanced drilling, because otherwise there wouldn't be advanced drilling go on. It's not prospecting at all.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Meekins.
Chairman, I've been changing my opinion about this. I haven't supported it in the past, and I think I can support it, but I am going to have to make a motion to delete one section, which we've consistently done on the House side, and that is we've taken out of all the statutes that we could find the power of the Commissioner of Revenue to purchase mortgages or loans of any type. And you do have on the very last page, I think it's just a boilerplate that they've been copying, and I don't think it would really hurt your program to take it out. But it would be important to me to delete that language that says the Commissioner of Revenue can purchase these, you know, at his discretion, because that would be consistent with all the other things that we're doing. Do you have any objection to that?
I'm not knowledgeable enough on the subject. As long as the funds are there in the program, as far as I'm concerned, it wouldn't be a bit bothered. Maybe someone knows more about it than I.
It wouldn't hurt that. It wouldn't hurt the program in that respect.
Where are you at, Mr.
Mr. Chairman, read the last page, section D, the first paragraph on top.
Okay. That's an automatic funding for the program.
Yeah, just turning off the automatic funding. Is it? But we've done that for all the other loan programs, too, so it's...
This says May, doesn't it?
It does say May.
First.
So it's discretionary.
That is boilerplate. Went with all the.
It's the same stuff we've just made a big deal out of, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. It's the same stuff that we cut out out of Title 37. All the powers that said May. Some of them said shall. Most of them said May. But we really got the commissioner down to where the only thing you can do is, you know, sort of manage the cash flow, and he can't really make any policy decisions because that's what, you know, that's what we're doing with all the entities that we've set up. Those people make those kind of decisions with the legislature, and the commissioner's out of it. I mean, he's not out of it to the sense that he's on the board, probably, of ADA and AHFC and all that, so he's not totally cut out, but as his powers over the surplus funds are removed and given to other people.
Mr. Holsworth, if we could find a chair for you, we'd like to have you at the table.
Let's get a couple of chairs up. Got any in your office?
Yeah. Mike, could you see about bringing some of those chairs out of the office, please?
Good time to get some more.
Chair.
Man.
Yeah, it's part of the...
Maybe we should... We got everybody to the wings now. Russ is gone, and Memory Joe is. Representative
Chairman, may I ask a question?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Representative Meekins, you were asking about the last sentence on the paragraph B, the last page. Is that correct?
The whole paragraph. Sub B, the top of the page.
The whole paragraph.
The whole paragraph?
Yeah.
First 5 lines. Mr. Chairman?
Were you going to respond to that, to Senate, to Representative Meekins' question? We'll just focus on that. Maybe Representative Cotton has something further on that subject.
Yes, for that. Amendment. Did you make it? Did you?
No.
Okay. In support of that, Betty, what happens is what's happened in the past, they'll set up a new loan fund, capitalize it, and then loan the money out, and then the commissioner would turn around and sell the paper to the Department of Revenue, and it would just be automatically recapitalized, and the legislature wouldn't have any control of the money going into that program. Take that language out, legislature would have to allow the money to go in. Commissioner of Revenue couldn't make that decision.
I find no problem with that.
Thank you.
Move and ask unanimous consent.
That
we delete the paragraph.
Okay. You have
that? Ask unanimous.
Hearing no objection, that amendment is adopted, and that sub B on page 4 is deleted. Representative Cotton?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just turn on late in the day, so I'm a little slow, so I got, I'm able to read on page 3. Paragraph C, loans under this chapter shall be secured by, one, a first priority lien or mortgage, or, and I don't understand this next sentence, second priority, which is subordinate to valid first priority, if the total, could I have somebody explain that to me or discuss that paragraph two?
If you've got, let's say that you have a significant first trust deed or a first position mortgage on a claim or piece of property, but you have a lot of equity in it, they're saying that they could take a second position assuming that there is sufficient equity in that property. It doesn't, even with a second, it wouldn't exceed 75% of the appraised value of the collateral.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lucas.
I'd like to ask Mr. Wagner from Commerce to come forward also. If he has any comments, I think he wishes to say something.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner?
Bert Wagner, Deputy Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development. Well, you're very busy. Just a few quick questions. A little trouble hearing in the back of the room. Mr. Gallagher made a statement, something about a $40,000.
$40 million operational impact on your department.
That figure does not come from the Department of Commerce. And I don't have a fiscal note prepared yet, but I just wish that is not the department's.
Your stand is you can do it within the budgetary allowances that we're giving you.
Perhaps Mr. Gallagher is taking that from his salaries and wages, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure. And perhaps, if I may, Mr. Chairman, just a couple more very quick points. On the House version of the ADA bill, beginning on page 33 on line 9, Mr. Chairman, you'll notice that mining is specifically included in the ADA bill. And perhaps I was a little hard of hearing and might have missed something, but I understand that these are not soft mining loans. These are commercial, bankable, collateralized with the ability to repay loans. Did I miss something, or is that correct statement?
I think that's pretty accurate.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
there's one exception, of course, and that's the 5-year grace period. But if they're not into production within the first 5 years in this proposal, all they have to do is pay the interest. So I suspect, and correct me if I'm wrong, that really allows the person less than a 9.5% interest rate, in effect.
I see. Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, if the loans would be bankable, and if they are commercial, then aren't we almost self-defeating what were some of the things we've talked about when we first started? We've talked about that we had numerous separate little loan funds for odds and ends and various purposes, and one of the functions of ADA was to take those loans that were of commercial quality, good, sound business loans, bond, import capital, and not continue to create a separate loan fund for every entity in the state. We have commercial fish, small business, and et cetera, et cetera. And I should point out, Mr. Chairman, that under definition of small business that some people don't realize, it's a very liberal definition, and we can do fishing loans even under the small business statute. Maybe I'm overreacting here, but I can next see that perhaps the grocery store operators and the mortuaries and everybody else will come in for their own separate loan. And it almost seems like we might be moving away from one of the concepts that we attempted to build into ADA, which was to consolidate some of these things instead of have separate little programs for every enterprise in the state. And I just am somewhat concerned over that. And the dollar amounts are another one. I don't know what the appropriation is or anything like that, and I'd like some time to perhaps look at a fiscal note or prepare one for the committee.
I appreciate that. Senator Farrington?
Mr. Chairman, we met with a representative from this department at the time this was drawn up. And one of the reasons that we felt it was definitely necessary to have a decided and distinct mining mentioned and in there is that mining has been considered in the small business from the time it was started. There hasn't been one single loan made because of the attitude of the department. It just hasn't been there, and that's why we had to go in this route. And that if we consider that and leave it in the same situation it is now, it would still be no mine loans made.
Mr. Chair, I don't have the numbers in front of me. The statement that there have been no mining loans made is incorrect. I know for a fact of one. No, it's not a very convincing argument, but there have been some made. And that wasn't the McGrath there.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, one minute.
They loaned some guy $4 to fill out an application.
Considerably more than that. Those were the only comments I had on, unless the committee had any questions.
Are there questions of the commissioner in his comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Meekins.
You familiar with the concepts of discounting to present value?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, yes.
What would happen if you didn't pay back anything except principal? You didn't pay any principal for 5 years, just paid interest. If you discounted two loans to present value, or the repayment to present value, one that was paid on the normal schedule and one that didn't pay any principal for the first 5 years, can you do that for me?
Vast difference. That would be about the best I could do right now, Mr. Chairman. But I should point out, if you're making an interest payment, and you're allowing the interest to be paid monthly, quarterly, or whatever, then you do, in all fairness, I believe, have a little bit different situation than you say on some of our other loan programs where you completely and totally defer interest and principal for 5 or 6 years. But it would depend on the term of the loan and when the principal kicked in at 5 years.
Mr. Chairman, how about this question? What's the difference between letting a hatchery not pay back for 5 or 6 years because of the fish cycle, and letting a mining loan not pay back for 5 or 6 years because of the mining cycle?
Sure. Is that a rhetorical question? Or just
no, I'd like him to answer it if he would.
Mr. Chairman, while I'm not, I should perhaps, therefore, he's not very qualified in the mining industry. I'm not sure exactly what the mining cycle is. I would assume that mining is seasonal and primarily in the summer. The fisheries, I think we all know that you collect eggs, the eggs incubate, the fish go out to sea. Depending on the species, they stay off for so long and they come back, and that's where you get the theoretical 5-6 year deferral on that. On the mining, I guess you could say that it takes so long to develop deposits, et cetera, and therefore you need a deferral.
I'm asking the question.
My conception of the mining industry is that you mine in the summer, and in the fall you come out with the proceeds of the efforts you put forth for that season, and you would use those proceeds to hopefully retire the debt.
Representative Tom.
I think that another major difference is that hatcheries are non-profit, and mines are
Mr. Chairman, I submit that in most instances that they're both in the nonprofit category. By intent, but I think maybe if we, people might understand this a little better if we call it the mining enhancement program. But I think that we ought to move the bill, move the amendment.
Senator Farrington?
I was just going to say, sir, that this does say our production begins, whichever is first, so that it may not be a five-year period, according to the development of the mine. Of course, in placer mines, it would be a different situation. Would you like to add to that?
Mr. Chairman, most of the concepts of mining in Alaska are based on placer. That's what has been said is seasonal. You work in the summer and you don't work in the winter. Your hard rock mining is year-round operation, but it takes you 5 to 10 years to, when you start from scratch and have a good prospect, to get it into production. And that is the answer. That should be understood.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lucas. Okay, making the assumption that all this makes a lot of sense, I got one problem with the way it's drafted, which I think is kind of a giveaway, okay, rather than an enhancement. There's a little difference there. And that is that in section D,
on page
3, mm-hmm. rather than say that if it's necessary for the thing to work right for the guy, you can delay the repayment of the principal for up to 5 years, which I think this committee might agree to, but you got here that it shall begin. And I mean, even if the thing is just signed, sealed, and delivered, a hell of a good business deal that is a bankable, bondable kind of thing, that, you know, one of the cream type of things, under this statute, they could, even if he could repay it, it says, maybe I'm reading it wrong, but I think it says that they can't require that he start repaying immediately, even if he could. And I don't think that's probably your intent. I think your intent is to give him some leeway so that if it's necessary in order for the thing to be feasible for the guy, they shall do it. But if it isn't necessary, then they could just make it regularly, couldn't they? I mean, I know your concern is to not have the department turn them down because they don't like it, but I think this could be redone in a way where you say, see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move the amendment not later than after the word began.
I just object to that question.
No, let's then go through it. Let's move the amendment.
Confess his question or his concern, repayment of the loan principal shall begin not later than 1 year after mineral production.
Yeah, that would do it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Mike, would that do it? Ask unanimous consent.
Hearing no objection, we'll adopt that as an amendment to the motion. To the
question on the amendment.
Well, I have another question.
You have a question?
No.
You have a problem for the question. Well, I think the motion was made unanimous consent. Asking if there's no objection, is there an objection?
Just on that one amendment that Sumner was talking about.
Yes, that's what okay. That's what we're talking about.
I thought you were talking. Joe was talking about the question on the amendment.
Oh.
Oh, he was.
Not later than in section sub D. Go ahead, Representative Cotton.
Right.
That's accepted, right?
Well, I think Representative Cotton has a question.
No, the not later than is okay.
All right. Then that's adopted without objection.
Right.
Representative Cotton.
Yeah. The other question is, 1 year after the date mineral production begins, you know, that doesn't seem like there's enough flexibility there either, because it may well be that you might want to produce, but if you start production, you're going to have to produce at a high enough rate to pay the loan off, right? So you might have to start out at a low rate, but you're in production, but not be able to make your payments. Is that a possibility?
Mr. Chairman?
This is speaking to placer mining, so that's all right.
No, this is unless it's a placer mine. This is everything but placer mines.
Mr. Chairman, I think
Senator Sutter,
from what you're saying, and I agree, that even though a repayment, they can negotiate a repayment plan, anything from a dollar up shall begin at that time. So there's some leeway in which they could address any problems.
No later than 1 year after the production begins, or 5 years from the date the loan is made. So production begins. Okay, here, you know, I was looking at the positive side of that one.
Mm-hmm.
The only other question I think has been answered in that certain reason the Meekins had is similar to the leasing, oil leasing laws on the, they can get it ready to produce and then not do anything and still be eligible to have their leases continue. So he was worried about stopping at that point and then not, in order not to have to make payment. I don't have any other questions on that.
Okay, we're ready for the question on the entire amendment which deals with the mining revolving loan fund.
Mr. Chairman, one quick chance for Burke to do you have a critical comment to make? It looks like are you finished?
No, I have nothing further to add other than my previous statements.
All in favor of the adoption of this amendment dealing with the mining revolving loan fund, signify by raising your right hand. You have an objection?
No, I have no amendment.
Go ahead. All opposed, same sign. Amendment passes. Representative Meekins.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if I really need this amendment, but an amendment on not later than.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been needed to be made in two places. I'm trying to move it through here on that same section. It says, for those named in this chapter, underwrite placer mining activities, the Department of Commerce may not require repayment of principal begin before the end of the second placer mining season after the loan is made. Would it be consistent to make it better? The second?
I don't think so. They say they shall not require it, but they could pay it if they wanted to, if it addresses your original concern.
May not require it.
The department may not require it, but the person can volunteer it without the department requiring it.
So why don't we just give the department the same ability to extend it if need be?
Mr. Chairman, we discussed that a bit earlier, and the department does have the flexibility necessary, I think, in my view, Mr. Holdsworth's view, maybe Senator Fahrenkamp's view, to adjust a payment schedule. They could amend or modify a payment schedule. There's plenty of flexibility in there, as I understand it, and that they do not require, they cannot require the principal begin before the end of the second placer mining season, but if the person wanted to, as you indicated in your example before, if they struck it rich and produced it rich and had surplus money around, they could pay it off if they wanted to prior to that.
Is there need for further amendment for this?
I'll think about it.
Mr. Chairman? What about the term mining in the ADA section? Should we amend that out as well?
Say again, please.
No.
The mining language in the ADA bill?
No, it won't.
We haven't done anything to that section of this bill yet.
We haven't adopted or rejected that section.
Yeah. When we do, if you have, alert us.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think there's any reason to do that. But,
yeah. Oh, don't let me.
Okay, Mr. Dugan, do you have a series? Are there other amendments right here at the table?
I have several amendments already.
Okay, well, why don't you hold yours then, because we just lose those things.
Okay.
I have one short amendment.
Okay, time for short amendments.
I'm not sure if the American Union still on here. Yeah, it is.
Anyway, you have it. It's a handwritten amendment. Page 29 and 30. This is accomplishes two purposes here. One of them is a cleanup, and the stuff on page 30 is a cleanup in that it's consistent with the other and existing language in that you're not eligible as a veteran if you've had a discharge other, no, you are eligible if you've had a discharge other than dishonorable. And the new language in here isn't consistent with that. It was a mistake in drafting the method of auditing system. In addition, on page 29, or yeah, page 29, line 29, at the current time, the reserves aren't eligible as veterans. This adds reserves to the statutes, but we would like to qualify that to say that they had to serve in the reserves in Alaska, as they would with the National Guard, Alaska National Guard, or the Air Guard, or the Naval Militia. So this would require that they serve in Alaska in the reserves to be qualified as a veteran.
Chairman, could I get those line numbers for you insert in this language?
You should have a handwritten amendment. Line 29 after the words armed forces at in Alaska. Page 30, line 3. Delete the word not. Delete the word honorable, and in its place, insert dishonorable. So the sentence would read, and who has received a discharge other than dishonorable. That's current law for the other qualifications, and it's the current language in the bill and the other two sections.
Further discussion? Further discussion on that amendment? There's no further discussion. Senate Representative Meekins.
I agree.
Unanimous consent passed. Hearing no objection, that amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hayes.
Are you accepting amendments only up to the number of pages we've accepted? First 31 pages, that it, or the whole bill? What's the?
I think what we're trying to do is to, we've made a motion, we're dealing with the pages 11 through 31.
Okay, I have an amendment. Mr. Chairman.
Representative. That concludes. That in the House, we're talking about the bill the House passed. Right?
Yes.
So that includes the amendments that the House that were passed in the horse
no.
last year. That's part of the bill.
Well, they were separate, and I think what we should do is go through that list if it's agreeable and look at those amendments.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's part of the bill as we understand it.
Yeah, but we also said that nothing's going to be accepted.
Yeah.
But we accepted the first 31 pages, and some of these amendments appear on some of those pages.
The amendments are there. And they address the pages in 11 through 31, I think. So
right,
what, I like, what I would
eventually
like
instead, what happened was instead of the House printing another bill, they printed an errata sheet for the amendments that were adopted.
I understand that, but I don't think we've addressed those amendments. Unless there's an objection, what I'd like to do is go use that as a set of amendments and go through and look at those individually.
With all due respect, Mr. Chairman, I consider these to be part of the bill and to be already included
in
the first 31
pages. If that's your understanding, I think that we weren't operating from the same base, and maybe we should go back and look at the entire section again.
Okay, well, I wanted to clear that up in any event.
Mr. Chairman, I can see the confusion. I think you both got a good case, and it appears that we either got to take a consensus or get a ruling from the chairman or something about what it meant when we said we're going to adopt those pages, because it's a really pretty nebulous motion to say, well, let's adopt these pages, and you're looking at this thing, does it include these? Well, it would have if it had been changed, but then again, there is a separate sheet. I think you could argue either way, and I didn't have it in my mind. I didn't know that they were related, so I don't have an opinion about what we did because I didn't have any assumption. Maybe you did.
Well, I had an assumption because I felt that we were adopting the House language. And doing so, this isn't all of it isn't on those pages, but there are some like 57-64, those wouldn't apply. Page 20.
The way that those amendments are structured would be quite easy for us to treat them individually as we go through. You know?
Right. Of course, the big question is there's an amendment there that we might have some trouble getting in.
There is.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, the motion was to accept the pages, so-and-so, not the amendments. Because I specifically asked, I didn't want to get into the dilemma where we would be in a position that we tried to move them out, and an objection from the House side would keep them in. Everything has to be moved in, as I understood it, and the motion was to accept pages such and such through such, not with the amendments, but just the pages.
I think I remember somebody saying, these pages in this bill, I'm not trying to go against you, but I think I do remember that. We could research it in the record, too.
Well, if that was your understanding, I mean, I suppose you wouldn't agree to that. I don't want to try to snooker you, but I didn't want to be snookered either. You suddenly realized there was something here you didn't like.
No, there is. No, we realized that going in.
Okay, I'll back up.
So what's before us?
I think we have Representative Hayes' amendments, and Mr. Dugan has some amendments.
I have several amendments, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just pass them on to the
meeting.
The one I have in front of you now, Mr. Chairman, is found on page 27, line 29, and it deletes the word duplex and inserts four-unit residence. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Okay.
Okay, motion's been made, objections noted, and we're on page 27, line 29.
Yeah.
Delete the word duplex, and that's the last word in the sentence, I guess, huh?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
It says four-unit residence. So that would read, and then we'll have any of these. Are an owner occupied four-unit residence?
Fourplex.
Fourplex.
Yeah.
Fourplex. Four-unit residence?
Same thing. Yeah,
owner-occupied
fourplexes.
Just call it a fourplex instead?
That's fine,
man. Okay. We'll stand at east.
Temporary.
What do you mean we're doing?
Where's the rest of your commentary?
Why would you delete duplex? You mean, you'd say after duplex, add fourplex. You wouldn't want to delete duplex, would you?
No. That's what you do. You see, this is delete duplex and insert four-unit. I think what you want to do is
Raise your right hand. All opposed? The motion carries. The motion fails.
I knew there was a trick in there somewhere.
Another amendment which begins on page 27 and it reads delete lines 22, 23, and 24. And what that does briefly, Mr. Chairman, is it allows the financial institution with services a loan to approve the proposed buyer under an assumption. And it's my opinion, and those that are in the industry that those that I talk to, that the if you have to go back to AHFC and with the enforcement limitations on the assuming buyer, that would affect the marketability of the sellers to home, and also would tend to increase the underwriting and other costs of housing finance preparation. I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
If I'm understanding Representative Hayes, I think I agree with him, but I'm not sure that his amendment does what he's saying. What is your goal, to allow assumptions or to prohibit them?
To allow them.
Yeah, that's my goal too, and that's why I put this language in here. Did I do it wrong or what?
Can I get some, can I?
That'd be good, yeah.
Mr. Barrett, could you make some comments on that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Basically what that does is to, I think the way it's written, Alaska Housing Finance might intend to impose income limitations on whoever was going to assume one of their loans that was originally made with income limitations in mind. And most, like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, and VA, right now allow the banks to make those approvals rather than approving them themselves.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm just going to try to clarify something.
I'm totally confused. Could we have Mr. Wolfer come up here too? Mr. Chairman, would that be okay?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, continue. I think what I would like to prohibit is when somebody tries to assume somebody else's mortgage, I don't want a banker telling them that they have to change their interest rate from 8.5 to 14 or something like that. That's my interest. I think the people shouldn't be allowed to assume, and we don't have to refinance if they can just assume. That's a good deal. So we should allow assumptions, and I don't want to have to have somebody have their rate jacked up just because somebody else takes over the payments. Now what does this do?
Mr. Chairman,
let me amend his suggestion to tell us how it should read to incorporate what he says.
And to incorporate what he says under existing Alaska law, the whole sentence would be preferably deleted. The intent of the sentence was to give the corporation broad authority in the matter of assumptions, to permit assumptions or to limit them where speculative circumstances were developing, where it appeared that people were taking advantage of low-income, low-rate mortgages through straw-man resales or otherwise. However, Alaska law generally now is, and I think the banks generally follow the view that assumptions cannot be prohibited, and that the best course, if it's not the pleasure of the committee to permit the corporation to prohibit or limit assumptions, is simply to delete the whole sentence rather than do otherwise, in my opinion.
Mr. Chairman, it depends on the ultimate interest rates that are going to be available to people. It appears to me that the following could happen. A person could qualify as a veteran if we left the same language we have in there now, a veteran and a low-income person, and as a result, be allowed to use 8.5% as his interest rate, buy a house, and soon after sell it to somebody who wouldn't have otherwise qualified as low income or veteran, and therefore they would have had to pay 10.5%, and that person would automatically get the 8.5% loan, right? Is that what would happen?
That's good. Mr. Chairman, it was the intention to at least to study that possibility and to enact a regulation if it was determined to be a realistic possibility of that occurring. In other words, for the legislatively mandated interest rates to be able to be avoided immediately, to have a regulation on that subject after public hearing. Numerous state housing agencies have this permission currently, and it was designed to, if you will, to give clarity and force to the interest rate provisions that the legislature was determining to enact. It's wholly permissive after regulations that the thing would be effective.
Ms. Walker? I've been asked to, at some later time, introduce an amendment that would say essentially that after a person's owned the house for 5 years and then sells it, that assumptions be allowed with no penalties and that sort of thing. Is that constitutional? Is it legal?
In my opinion, yes. And of course, it's a question, Mr. Chairman, of how much discretion you want to leave to the corporation. The corporation could enact just that regulation if it was determined that 5 years was the appropriate time, etc., through its regulatory power, or 3 years, or whatever.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that there is a problem there. Perhaps your amendment is the best way to go on it. Of course, the problem is with the vet, or in this case, person with low interest and a veteran might have trouble finding somebody that qualified until they got a tough time selling his house. So it'd be pretty tough to restrict him, but at the same time, you want to prevent the abuse. So how about if we defer the amendment and maybe consider at the same time we can consider what you had in mind?
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, let me answer this question 1 minute. Would you have any objection if I gave my group of amendments plus your amendment to the drafters and tell them to generate something that effectively incorporates the 5 years and...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Well, I don't know that... I think we might be trying to prevent a possibility that has sort of a slim chance of arising. Maybe there's a lot of slick guys out there that are speculating in mortgages that can be assumed, you know. And if so, we need to stop it. But the only abusive assumption, seems to me, would be this guy that's putting up some dummy guy to purchase these mortgages and get them at a special rate and slide them around, you know. But I doubt that that's going to happen. I don't know what your experience would be. But it seems to me we should draw some language to specifically prohibit assumptions for that purpose, or to allow the corporation to prohibit assumptions for that purpose, but allow them in every other for every other reason, and not just after 5 years. I'll tell you why. I think if we're going to decide to give a benefit to a veteran, he ought to be able to transfer the benefit. He ought to be able to keep that benefit forever, not just while he's living in his house. We're giving him a pretty good loan, right? Some kind of a deal on his loan. And part of the benefit of that would be that if he sells his house and somebody can assume it, well, then he's in a better position than somebody who isn't a veteran. So he'd retain his benefit under that.
Mr. Chairman? Perhaps one of the solutions here would be, I think it would be fairly equitable, if we just required the fact that the dwelling the owner occupied. I think that would obviously stop a guy from owning four or five houses or from assuming four or five loans. And yeah, but if we continue, you know, with the owner occupancy and let the banks make that approval, let the banks make that decision rather than burdening Alaska Housing Finance with additional underwriting and additional decision in cases of assumptions. As long as it's owner-occupied, you obviously stop, I think, what you're trying to stop.
If I may, I submit it's a matter of broad language now, prohibiting, allowing, or otherwise setting conditions on, and it would be whether the committee felt that they should give that degree of delegation to the corporation after investigating and taking public hearings, or wanted to set a precise term on it at this time.
Mr. Chairman, what about language that said the corporation has the power to prohibit assumptions that are being done for the purpose of speculation? I think you could get me some language like that, that only in that case, which is the only reason I can see to prohibit it, that you could have all the juice you needed to do it, and it would be up to your discretion as to who's doing it for speculation and who isn't.
Is that workable?
I think that can be worked very readily.
Okay, if you both.
Do you agree?
But
do you agree with that? Do you understand what we're asking? Will you draft amendment and or the wording, and when you get it, let me know, and we'll go back and make that motion.
Okay. Be up to the corporation.
That way, I don't think we have to move these either.
I think we all agree. It's just a question of getting there.
We'll get him to get the wording and we'll move on.
Who's that? Bill, you know, the vendors we're talking. They were looking at the other end of it too. They didn't want.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On your in front of you, I just inserted a new amendment. It deals with local community option. If anybody has a copy. I'd like to move the amendment and ask unanimous consent. And I'll make that motion.
Okay.
And I'd like to ask Sterling Gallagher to come up and explain the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, this amendment has to do with ability to sell a bond in a local community. And the situation came up in Pueblo, Colorado, where you had a city sell a bond, and then right behind it, the county sold a bond. And this county, a month later, sold a bond at a lower interest rate. And they had trouble filling the city commitment. we have a situation in Fairbanks in which we can have a bill that fits the Ullman bill. We'd like to do a local community option because we think we give people a lower rate, and we'd like to have this so that the community can decide whether they get a better program or not. And this will only go into effect if we deliver the people a lower rate in the town.
Mr. Gallagher, what's the negative side of this amendment?
I'm not sure there is a negative side.
Mr. Wolfer thinks here. He has one.
Mr. Wolfer, it's about time I found something to get all you guys fighting. You've been huddled in there like a pack for the last 2 days. I'll relish this. You've got the floor for as long as you want it.
I'm afraid I'm not going to give you a very good fight, Senator, but I feel that the situation with respect to the Fairbanks issue, and incidentally I'm bond counsel on that matter too if it goes forward, is that the city did achieve a transition amendment in Congress. It now looks as though they can go forward with their bonds. An amendment such as this, I don't think would achieve its purpose. The fact of the matter is the residents of Fairbanks, through that bond issue, will be able to achieve a lower interest rates through that bond issue if the rates are more attractive, if it succeeds, or through AHFC, depending entirely on the market. And I don't think there's any way to anticipate at this point in time, although we are hopeful when the bill passes that the rates can be attractive and certainly in line with those in the Act, as to who's going to have the better rate. But the citizens of Fairbanks, it seems to me, logically should be able to choose, and the bank should be able to choose which program they should avail themselves of. I don't think it's effective for a city council to exclude something which is essentially between a bank who originates a mortgage and the homeowner. We're talking about bank seller services that originate mortgages, who send those mortgages either to the city of Fairbanks or to AHFC. It's beyond a matter of normal city jurisdiction to say to banks or to say to homeowners, you can't use a state program, or you must use this city program. So I think it's both has an anti-competitive flavor to it, and I think additionally it's ineffective to achieve its purpose.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman?
Thank you.
Mr. Gallagher has been pushing this amendment, and I've been tossing it around and during the course of the day in several conversations with Fairbanks, we feel that this is not necessary now. I'm going along with basically what Mr. Woolworth had to say. I talked to Mayor Carlson this afternoon about 3:30 or 4 o'clock, and they had been doing some research and feel that it's no longer necessary.
Question? Any further discussion? Questions called for? All in favor of the amendment, raise your right hand. All opposed? All in favor, raise your right hand. All opposed, same signal, all opposed. Motion fails.
Meekins, I'm going to watch you.
You're the one who objected to the motion. You're on the record.
Let the record reflect how
any chairman that can rule the motion passed when a
has got talent.
Right? Yes, yeah, right. I better watch out myself.
Hayes is in the amendment business.
This deals with a section that we had discussed briefly before, and I understand that Senator Mulcahy has made a request for some language that would affect the same section. So until that time, I'd prefer to consider all those amendments at once if possible.
Mr. Hayes?
I don't have any problem with that. Can we come back to other pages within, say, the first?
Sure.
Okay. I don't want to move ahead then. I'll just wait for the
we're going to hold this one. Any other amendments at this time? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I had a series of amendments that have come from various people that I'd like to hand out.
Let's go one at a time, if you will, so we don't
Okay.
No, I don't care. Go ahead and pass them out. I'll just try to keep them separate. Walk through.
Most of the ancients are technical. I'm just pulling.
Who is Paul?
Amendments. Mr. Dugan, are you familiar with each one of these and as to what they do?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am, and also by whom they're offered.
All right.
Unfortunately, the very first page contains two amendments that were prepared by Representative Malone, and I've been unable to locate it. So,
you want to put it at the bottom of the stack?
Put it at the bottom.
Mr. Chair?
Guys, let me ask you, please, in terms... Guys, let me respectfully ask you that it's a little hard to hear. If you want to maybe step inside the door or something, it'd help us out here a little bit. Okay, next amendment.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I noticed that you have one of your members gone. I wonder if he's out eating dinner like I'd like to be.
We're taking turns. We're going to, for each single
we don't trust each other.
Trust you, Sam.
Trust and leave.
We will break in time for breakfast. That's a commitment.
What about you? Are you interested in getting a break?
I'll do this whatever you want.
I'll tell you.
As long as you guys are trying to veto it.
Yeah,
there's nothing as aggressive as a hungry representative, is what I understand.
Right.
Mr. Dugan.
Mr. Chairman, the next two stapled sections are amendments that have been offered by the administration, and I believe that Mr. Wagon and all or some members of his team there can explain them.
Mr. Chairman, if they're technical amendments, the briefer the explanation, the better.
Yes, you want to come forward? And by all means, I tell you, and if I catch, at least while I'm chairing, if I catch anybody misrepresenting anything else, I'm just going to absolutely throw all these damn things out. But I want a brief explanation. If it's technical, just say technical, no change to the bill, and we'll buy your comment. Yes,
Chairman, are you planning to accept any amendment past page 31? Some of these go past.
Let's do them all.
I'd like to do all of these and get them out if that's agreeable with sure. you. Any objection to that?
How does that affect, and if we amend something on something we haven't adopted, that we'll have to adopt it officially?
Yeah, that's correct. And in that instance, and if you remind me to tell the chairman when he gets back, that as we amend those pages, if we adopt those pages, it will include those amendments at that time.
Right.
Fair enough.
Fair enough.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I may, I'd like to allow Eric Wolford to handle that. I believe it's the first... four, because they're suggested by bond counsel. I think he can give you a very brief, concise.
All right.
They are all technical.
And they have not changed the substance of the bill.
No substantive change.
This one starts on page 33, line 10. Is that correct?
33, line 10. Mm-hmm. 31, lines 6 through 9, also technical. 33, line 2, technical.
Okay.
39, line 46, technical. 41, line 25, we simply needed language, is technical. Page 48, line 14, not technical, substantive.
Right, hang on right for me then. So far, everything has been related as being technical and no substantive change. And I'm urging that we do move the amendments and adopt the amendments. And then when we have a final bill drafted and we read through it, we can always address anything that seems to not be consistent. Yes, sir? Mr. Cotton.
Were there two pages that you missed, Eric, on page 39 and page 41? Is that part of that packet?
39, pages lines 4-6, excuse me.
And page 41,
line 25, that's technical.
Oh, you did mention those? Okay,
I may have omitted them.
No, you did.
Yeah.
Okay.
You did. Ask unanimous consent for the motion.
Without objections, these are adopted. Do you have a copy of them?
Yes.
Okay. Excuse me,
I'd like to take this. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
There are two amendments left, one on page 48, the other on page 52. I don't consider these technical amendments. I think they're policy and they should be brought to the consideration of the committee.
What's the first one then?
Okay, the first one changes the word, of course, occupant to applicant. And the theory behind this, Mr. Chairman, is
should ADA allow investor-owned properties? A very brief example. The way the bill is drafted right now, it probably does not allow an outside investor to own a project and then lease it out completely. This amendment would specifically allow outside investors to build a facility and then lease it.
Outside, define that, please.
Someone who does not occupy the project. Now, there are two sides to this coin, Mr. Chairman, as I see it. There are some facilities, especially in the perhaps rural areas, like perhaps a specific example, I understood there was an individual who wanted to build an office building in Tote. It'd be occupied, I think, by state troopers and fish and game or somebody. Without this amendment, that facility would not be allowed. And yet on the other side, do we want to allow speculation to
this? Yeah, let me ask you that. This would encourage, the way the amendment goes, would encourage more private activity. You wouldn't have to live in the building or occupy the building to finance it.
That's a true statement, I believe, sir.
Okay. Everybody understand?
Mr. Chairman,
yes, sir.
I'd like to have him finish. You said, on the other hand, do you want to allow what?
On the other hand, I believe some caution should be exercised because this would lend itself to spec building and speculation if they're not some cautious and some controls built in there. So.
You're advocating this
amendment? Can you introduce it?
I introduced the amendment, so, Mr. Chairman, you could say I'm advocating it. If you want to say I'm vacillating, say I'm vacillating. But there are two sides to the coin. I can see the positive side. I can see the negative side. It's a policy decision. I feel it should be in front of the free conference.
I have only one question. In your opinion, is there an opportunity to have it abused by outside of Alaska people?
No.
Yes. That we have no residency requirement in this bill. I mean, it can be, it's presumptively available to any investor who's arrived in Alaska a week or a year or whatever. Sir.
But could a California resident or an Oregon resident make an application and finance under this plan?
I thought we had a residency.
Is it legal to make a residency requirement?
I would respectfully hope the committee did not put it in, sir, given the legal problems with durational residency vis-a-vis bonding.
Has there been any abuse of this in the past, to the best of your knowledge?
Mr. Chairman, may I?
Yes.
As ADA functions now, I'll point out that we have made loans to corporations like Louisiana Pacific that are non-resident, but the facilities were definitely located in the state, and I think what we want to do is create jobs and employment so if the facility is physically located in the state. That's the problem.
Is that a requirement of the bill?
Absolutely.
Okay. Any further questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Well, then, the changing of this word wouldn't affect the number of people that were coming, that were, you know, California residents just investing in Alaska without. Would it have an effect? It wouldn't. I think Mr. Wolf was saying that.
I think it would tend to increase it. I mean, we're now permitting shopping center financing, for example. To the extent the breadth of financial investment opportunities increase, then it would follow that there'd be more people who would potentially qualify.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I would agree that, you know, that's a possibility, but I think that the merits of the amendment would far override the possibility. I mean, there's always a possibility of somebody perhaps taking advantage of this program to an extent we might not like to see it. But on the other hand, I think what we're trying to accomplish in the positive aspect of it would far override any of the negative things we might be concerned about.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the amendment.
Sure.
Object? For discussion or just
object? No, it's kind of confusing to me, Mr. Chairman, but it seems to me like maybe we wouldn't want to do it for the reasons that might encourage something we don't want to encourage. I might be off base on that.
Mr. Chairman? Do I understand right now we are allowing shopping centers, right? Or we are not?
Mr. Chairman.
No, not on Ada as it exists now.
Not under Ada. But
and, Mr. Chairman, under the state program that's operated, it must be owner-occupied or the owner must utilize the facility.
Representative Cotton.
When you're granting a loan for somebody in this situation like this, would you expect that you'd require to see the person show that he has a commitment for occupancy?
Mr. Chairman? If I were running a program, I'd want more than, if you define commitment as leases, yes, that's good enough for me. If you define commitment as letters of intent, that's not good enough for me.
So it has to be pre-leased. Yeah.
In other words, I can support the amendment because my thinking is that anything done like this, it definitely would have to show its financial viability. In other words, the authority has no reason doing it anyway, regardless.
So the speculation and a spec building and an office building, as far as you're concerned, probably wouldn't happen.
Probably not, but I might be here 2 months from now and might not have anything to do with the authority, so there is a crack in the dam, so to speak, there, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hayes, Representative
Hayes. Normal financial institutions have that provide takeout financing have certain requirements about occupancy. It's not purely speculation. I would assume that there would be regulations adopted along that same line. And there are such provisions as 75% occupancy before you can qualify for a takeout loan for permanent financing. There is a real, I think there's a real problem in Alaska for most small business people in finding permanent financing. I think that this is, although there is a possibility that someone, a short-timer in Alaska, could perhaps avail himself of this. I think that what you're really providing is an opportunity for an Alaskan resident who doesn't have all of the outside connections for with insurance companies and so forth for permanent financing to become a landlord, to have an investment. I certainly would support the amendment. I don't consider it speculative in that respect.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Sumner.
I think there's a little more control than is implied by the amendment, proposed amendment. If you also, when you make a loan, you want to make sure that it's protected to some extent by the fact that somebody's around to look after it or manage it or take care of it. And I assume that occasionally that is done by agreement or by contract or something, but isn't that some part of the consideration in terms of the total package?
Mr. Chairman, I assume when you make an in-loan, Senator, obviously you're going to take steps to safeguard your collateral or you're a fool.
In spite of the normal down payment and all of the other stuff, that is one of the considerations.
Yes.
Yes. So in that light, I support the amendment. I think it is another shot in the arm for the...
Representative Cotton.
Your comment that, you know, you might not be there, so the next person might not be as tight as you. What about some language that would require, if they're not going to occupy themselves, that they show lease contracts or some requirement along those lines? Do you think that could be reasonably drafted, or would it be so cumbersome that it wouldn't be practical?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hayes, I guess, is familiar with long-term insurance company building commitments, and they're really soul-searing documents to deal with. And I would think that would be, again, if I may say, a subject for regulation. Those kind of occupancy figures, pre-lease requirements, releases of percentages of the loans and so on, are very hard to put in a statute and hope to cover all the bases that a good long-term insurance company type commitment would find you to. They're very detailed and cover every conceivable contingency.
Well, I just worry about, you know, you see a lot of empty office buildings depending on what's happening. And like, for instance, when the city decides to move out of one quarters and move into another, and then they completely empty like the Hill Building downtown, just might have seemed like a good business investment to the government or something else happened, but suddenly the building's empty. So it seems like it could be kind of a shaky deal. So, go ahead.
I do believe that the industry standards in terms of the agreements that are normally a part of every transaction is more than substantial enough to accomplish the end that you're after. And to try to put it in statute, I agree with Mr. Walford that depending on geographically where it's located, try to tie some of these requirements down in statutes might not be realistic. And I do think regulation is the place to accommodate that. And I do know that the industry standard per se is pretty locked in and sufficient. Mr. Chairman, I call for the question. This is a policy decision, and we're rolling pretty fast normally.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Commissioner.
If you are going to call for the question, it's just been pointed out to me for sake of this. Consistency on page 48, lines 6 and 7, the word project occupant appears again. And if you do decide to adopt these amendments, you would want to change that word to project applicant.
Right, project applicant.
And that's on lines 6 and 7 on page 48.
Delete proposed project occupant, insert project applicant.
And Mr. Chairman, for your... I forgot, but I mentioned before we got here that for your information that we would go ahead and proceed beyond line or page 33, whatever it is, and that if we adopted these amendments, then they'd still be subject to the adoption of those
entire sections.
But if we adopted the sections, these would be adopted at the same time.
Fine. There's just one change then on line 7. Is that right?
Who unanimously thinks?
Your suggestion, sir, there was just one change on line 7?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. It was on.
Request for the proposed project applicant.
Delete the words proposed project occupant. And it would then insert project applicant.
Okay. Unanimous consent has been asked, and hearing no objection for the adoption of this amendment, it is adopted.
Yeah,
another one.
Page
53.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. That was just the one for the single page, right?
It's the top sheet, I guess. Right.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Commissioner.
There's one more on page 52, and this is probably non-controversial now since you've adopted the other one, but it's page 52, lines 5 and 6, item 9, and it changes the definition, it defines project applicant. And I believe we have the amendment.
Move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption amendment. Conforming with the thing we just made.
Any more objection? That amendment is adopted on lines 5 and 6, page 52.
Page 27?
I think there's something wrong with this next amendment. It doesn't fit.
What's by that?
You may want to defer this, if I may, Mr. Chairman. This is the whole subject of moving the amendment number 11, which is Mr. McKinnon's amendment.
Oh, yeah.
If I may. And the other amendments attached go to House Bill 205, which is the appropriation bill, not before you.
You can not before this committee, yes.
Representative Hayes? I still have two or three amendments I deferred for a minute so we can take these up. Are we through with those technical amendments?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Representative Hayes.
Thank you. While we're on the subject,
there is one more technical amendment offered by staff.
Did you look through here, sir?
I'm sorry.
There was one additional.
Those were his.
Well, while I was gone, were these were yours?
Yeah, those were.
Those are the ones. Representative Cotton.
Page does everyone still have that in front of them?
Page 30.
Page 57, line 27.
I got it.
Who's, and then there's this?
The CRA, but I don't know.
Page 57, line 27.
I think Mr. Dugan can explain it, then, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Dugan?
Do I get a raise with that? You don't entitle me, Mr. Chairman? This amendment is proposed by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, and it has been run through the Ken Vassar over in Legal. The section that this applies to is an attempt to provide means of showing marketable title under the provisions of ANCSA that prohibit actual conveyance or sale or anything until I believe it's 1991, the terms of the legislation. And all this would do is eliminate Section C, the qualifications would then read the borrower is an Alaska Native and title of the property was originally transferred, et cetera, and insert this C as a definition as to what would constitute marketable title.
Is this under ADA? No, this is under non-conforming?
Yes.
No.
Bert?
Excuse me.
Are you familiar with this one? Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Meekins?
The reason I ask him that is that although the House bill does have this under CNRA, I would hope that we could move it to Commerce at some point. In, since Mr. Wagner represents the Commerce Department.
So Mr. Chairman, I'll object to that. As a matter of fact, strong enough that we probably ought to hold this to one of the final items. And I don't mind any language that they want to talk about, but except for the transfer. And they take an awful lot of time to discuss the merits and demerits of that. So if you're talking about...
You're not talking against the amendment, you're talking against the other suggestion.
Yeah, well, it's a, we don't have to talk about moving to Commerce in order to get it. I just don't understand the amendment at all.
Quote, restricted deeds, made of restricted deeds, and it's just defining them a little better.
I don't think they're in a situation where they don't think.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, but
I don't see how it works, Mr. Chairman. It says, by delivery...
What's the source of the amendment?
Oh, it's little C, not big C?
CRA.
Oh, okay. Okay, it's a new subsection C, not the indented big capital C, but the little C, and you wipe out all of the big capital C, is that right?
That's correct.
And then you redefine it, okay.
See what I mean? It comes to the deed.
Was there someone here to talk on this amendment?
Well, Mr. Dugan's
carrying it. No one from the department?
I was not able to get anybody from the department over here.
Mr. Chairman,
that's the description of a restrictive deed, which FHA loans on a restrictive deed like that. Some of the other aid programs the federal have loan on a restrictive deed like that.
Do you recommend adoption of this? Does it make sense to you?
Does it make sense?
Does it do anything for the situation in a village where the property that a person may wish to build on is not defined in the traditional way? It starts at this point on the road and goes to that point. It's held in common.
Yes, sir.
And how would that work mechanically then? What would the lending institution have as security for the loan?
Uh, That's the whole point. The lending institution is the non-conforming program. It doesn't work too good when the private lending institution ain't going to loan you any money.
So it would only work under this program?
Yes, sir.
But then how does that work? What kind of legal tie does a lending does the state non-conforming program have on the...
When the township trustee, again, it takes a little explanation, is working an area, predominantly native area.
And he has to honor this commitment first?
Yeah, well, what happens is, the first native, says he wants his title unrestricted, and that's the way he gets it. He can sell it, transfer, and so forth. You say you want your title in a restricted deed, it's really in trust in the BIA, and that's what that description is. The difference is you may be able to get private financing for yours on your lot because it can be incumbent and taken away from it. You can't really get private financing on your lot.
This would consider both of those marketable title.
And this would consider both marketable
That's
title
what
for the non-conforming.
Okay. I got it.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a good amendment. I have some familiarity with that. I think it addresses a particular area on the bridge.
I just wanted to be sure that it did, that it directed itself to this problem. Representative Cotton.
Is it a marketable title, though? I mean, can it be sold?
Not in the true sense of the word. It's only in the definition of this loan program.
So it's not a marketable title. He was calling it a marketable title for the
non-conforming loan program.
But the non-conforming loan program requires a marketable title, right?
According to the definitions that you're going to give.
Why are we requiring it? And then saying that this doesn't really mean what we're saying.
Well, some administrator is going to have to try to figure out what you really intended to do. Are you going to allow loans beyond restricted deeds? That's what goes up.
I imagine that the restricted deed, the definition by the surveyors is going to come eventually. And it will be defined in a traditional way, right?
Yeah, you try to trace the title. Yeah. Title is traceable to that person and his family, but it's held theoretically in trust on their behalf by BIA, and it's considered it's titled restricted deed.
Representative Hayes?
Mr. Chairman, there is a mechanism whereby that could become, if necessary, that could become marketable. The BIA has a procedure where you can, they can advertise, and the main thing is if it's you want to market, you can do it by application as long as they go through a certain process to make sure that the person gets fair price.
Yep. You can unrestrict it.
Yes, you can unrestrict it.
Moving as unanimous consent.
Is there objection to the adoption of the amendment? Hearing none? So
I'll take care.
Next amendment, Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next amendment is on page 33, line 25, and I think it ties in, or should tie in, with the amendment whereby the occupancy amendment which applied to office buildings, whereby we allowed office buildings. What we're doing here is adding, it has to do with the goals. It says the achievement of the goal of full employment and establishment and continuing operation development of industrial manufacturing, small business, and then in tourism, and then I'm inserting between small business and tourism, commercial real estate, that I think we just adopted as a policy decision in terms of what we're going to be investing in under 8. I think it's consistent. It was one that I knew this other one was coming in.
Mr. Chairman,
we don't have a
representative.
What is commercial real estate?
Well, commercial real estate is real estate that's used for other than residencies, or for for single family residencies.
But it's the land and the building.
Yes, land and building.
Wasn't that a business?
Could be land, I suppose.
Wouldn't it be included under business?
No, I don't think so. Business, not necessarily.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Meeks.
Could I ask Mr. Wolfer to comment?
With respect, Mr. Hayes, this is covered precisely in the Act as it now stands under the definition of business enterprise, and real and personal property are included. So we don't.
You don't need it?
Do not need it.
All right.
It includes industrial property or.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Industrial
okay.
Property.
Fine.
Okay. Fine.
Move it.
Okay.
Next.
With that assurance, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to.
Another one?
Mr. Chairman, the next amendment I'd like to propose is under the is on page 50, line 5, and has to do with the definition of business enterprise. This somewhat tracks the two bills that were introduced this year by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, Senate Bill 378 and House Bill 661, which allows the inclusion of a non-profit organization in the definition of business enterprise. And the reason I have